Welcome to the Pata Maltese podcast. My name is Celine Terranova. I'm an author and brand new podcaster here to help you in your creative career. This show is all about advice, support, and inspiration for performers, writers, musicians, and any kind of artist. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of the Pata Maltese podcast. Today, my guest is Ashley Tabatabai, and together we talk about acting, making films, and juggling all that with a freelance job. But before that, let's talk about the latest news. You might have seen the new page on my website, the training one. I was talking about it during the last episode. I've started a training service that is an expansion of my business, and it's all about well-being, mental health, and work environment. I've been contacting theatres in London, at least at first, to work with them to improve their staff's lives and their environment at work. It's great because it allows me to link what I do for the part-time artist and my professional experience as a manager in a theatre. So if you are listening to this and you work in a theatre or in a creative business and would like to talk to me about this, please let me know. On the writing side, it's also been very busy. I've started querying for my novel Healers, and it's absolutely terrifying to know that professionals are actually going to read my stuff. And honestly, the hardest part was really writing the synopsis. I'm not really sure it's really good. I feel really bad at it, but I know that most writers feel really bad at that, so we'll see what the feedback is. And in the meantime, I'm working on my new novel that doesn't have a title yet. I don't think I'm going to be ready to write it until probably next year, but at the moment I'm really enjoying developing the story and the characters and the plot, etc. So I'll let you know more when I know more. And then finally, I am currently preparing the follow-up book to The Part-Time Artist. Now, I have several ideas and I need to do more research about it to see what would appeal more to you guys, but I hope to be able to write it during NaNoWriMo, the same way I wrote The Part-Time Artist last year during NaNoWriMo. I will probably talk about it more when I have done a little bit more work on it, so probably in the next episode. Right, that's all for today. Let's go to the interview. So today I am interviewing Ashley Tabatabai, who is an actor, but who also writes, produces, and directs his own films. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Hey, Celine. Thank you for having me.
Could you please introduce yourself and tell the listeners all the things that you do?
Well, you kind of did half of it for me, but sure. Yeah. So as you said, I've basically been an actor and a filmmaker for quite a long time. I don't really want to put years to it because it's too many and it makes me sound old. But I guess, you know, I've worked as a storyteller, and alongside that, to go in line with the theme of your podcast, I've also worked in digital marketing for many years as well. And I suppose I'm in this interesting place where I've kind of experienced both the super creative artistic side of life and also maybe the more, should we say, technological and corporate and traditional side as well. So I can see them from separate views and maybe how they intersect in some points as well.
And I know that you were living in Spain for a few years, and then you came to the UK to study. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that? Because I know that you studied not acting, but management, right?
For my university or college degree, yeah, I studied management, and my acting sort of training has been non-conventional in terms of doing like a university or degree program in the UK. I've trained with coaches, so more the American model of acting coaching. So my academia has been, yeah, traditional. I grew up in Spain. I moved there when I was five, so I basically was raised in that country, and I came to the UK when I was 19, and yeah, I studied management at York. And I think the reason was, it was kind of what I label the course for the undecided. You know, like I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So it was a good general course to give me a little bit of knowledge about lots of different bits of business, but without going too deep into any one area. And then, yeah, I got my degree and my piece of paper, and in the final year of doing it, realized I think I need to explore this creative thing that I'd been exploring when I was younger more seriously.
So you didn't know at the time that you wanted to be an actor, or at least you had maybe ideas, but you were not sure. Did you? How did you take the leap to go from what you studied to actually, you know what, I want to try this acting thing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I guess I never really thought when I was a teenager that it was a viable sort of career. You know, I come from a family that's super mixed culturally, and my dad, who's Iranian, is quite open-minded, but there's still Iranian cultures and values are quite academic. And so for me, studying at a university wasn't like an option. It was just a given. You're going to do that. And so when I was in high school doing plays and creating shows and script writing, it was for fun and it felt good, but it never felt like this is how I'll make a living. And when I got to my final year of university, I really felt like I needed to explore it more. And it wasn't about money or a career. It was just, I need to satiate this itch. And so I started, I guess, like most people do, they, you know, look around for classes and look around for student films and even, you know, extra work. Yes, I admit it. I worked as an extra for a few months way back when, and just really trying to get, I guess, a feel for the industry and to slowly learn, you know, what is it about and what are the techniques and what do you have to do or become as a person? And it was a long process, still is.
You know, I'm really interested when you said that you learned mostly with coaches, which is more the American way. Is it more difficult here in the UK to do that? And why is it the American way, actually?
Well, I'm labeling it the American way. That's just my perception of it. I guess what I mean by that is, you know, in the UK, there's the tradition of these drama schools, and that's not really so prevalent in the States. I suppose there are some institutions there, like the Actors Studio, that do degree course programs, and you can approach the drama school angle. But you can also go to LA or New York, and there are lots of acting coaches that you can train with, and it's not like a three-year degree. It's you can come in for as long or as little time as you like, and you can do multiple classes. And so it's a little more free and flexible for you to find the course that resonates with you at the time of your life that you're in, and also the coach that, you know, you can relate to in the way that's best for you, because not every teacher is the right teacher for every person.
Oh, that's really interesting. It seems like it's a bit more specialized to what you want to do, as opposed to drama school being a bit more general. Can I say that?
Is
that
maybe. I don't know if I can say it either. I can't really comment because I've not done drama school, mm-hmm. and I would never talk down about it because I know loads of people that have done it and loved it. And look, British drama schools have produced some incredible acting talent. So it's just different. It's another approach. And to be honest, in the last 5 to 10 years, London specifically has seen more of this influence of acting coaches pop up. And a lot of American LA-based studios have opened schools in London. I was lucky to train at one of them for three and a half years. So that, I think, is becoming more of a common thing in the UK as well now.
And in your experience, when you were applying to parts and auditions, etc., did that make a difference for the casting directors?
Hard to say, really. I mean, I only say that because, you know, a lot of the things that I get submitted for is done by my agent. And I don't think at this stage it matters so much in terms of my training as opposed to her being really good at her job. So maybe, I guess it's more of a question for her, to be fair. I don't know if she uses it when she pitches me. I know, you know, once in a while when I've approached certain representation in the past, when I didn't have an agent or I wanted to move, they would know the studios I've trained at. And some of them would look at that and go, oh, you've trained there. I love the way they teach and the actors they sort of help to create. So I suppose it does have some weight, for sure.
And you've been acting for a while now. You've done a lot of different things in acting. Can you tell me what are the best and the worst aspects?
It is an interesting question because I don't really know if I've given it that kind of thought, if I'm honest. I suppose, look, there's the obvious thing of if you're trying to have a career as an actor in show business, then it's newsflash. It's not the most stable. So I suppose, you know, like many artists, there is that element of uncertainty. But, you know, if I want to go real deep with it, I think a lot of industries that are more traditional are starting to move that way anyway as the years progress and technology develops. But that's a separate conversation. Mm-hmm. The best things, look, for me, the best thing is that you get to do things and explore things that you otherwise wouldn't. Like I've been able to be in situations and try things in my life that I wouldn't normally ever do. And it's just the fact that this particular line of work lets you do that. And it lets you explore parts of humanity too. That could be just as simple as researching a role or a person. You know, for me, it's very much about the psychology and the truth of humanity, like most good art should be. And I think that's the best thing because you're learning about yourself and you're learning about people and, you know, you hopefully, touch wood, can use that in your own life. I think that's kind of the whole point.
That's awesome. Do you feel like being an actor has allowed you to explore that? And if you had stayed in a kind of traditional job, you would not have had that chance to do that?
I don't know. I think being an actor has obviously helped me explore that 100%. If I hadn't done, you know, acting and just done a more traditional job, would I have had the same experiences? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much of me being drawn to acting is down to like my upbringing and my culture and, you know, like what's the nature versus nurture argument. I couldn't tell you. I guess I would have been different, but I'll never know, which is probably not a bad thing.
And when we talk about the most difficult aspects of being a writer, so you said that it's not stable, that it can be really stressful, I can imagine. How do you keep yourself motivated?
You know, the challenging thing as an actor, I suppose, is you just want to work, you just want to act. So I think for me, that's evolved over time. But I think many actors would probably agree that when you're waiting for a job or an audition or the chance or an opportunity, that can be frustrating because you don't have any control over what's the next thing you're going to, you know, get come your way that lets you do what you love. So that's frustrating. But I think the way to stay motivated, or the way that I found, is actually to write and to create in that downtime and to tell your own stories, because that means that you're less stressed or anxious when it comes to waiting for that next job. And, you know, I find it interesting because I always like to say it's good to look at what the people at the top of any industry are doing and learn from them. And if you listen to a lot of the top actors, and I'm talking what we would call movie stars, many of them are also producers. And there's a reason for that. And it's because they are in the same situation as us. They might be making more money and have more exposure, but they still have that uncertainty from job to job. So they produce because they want to make their own stuff and tell their own stories. You know, Bradley Cooper talked about that this year. I remember watching an interview in January in the SAG-AFTRA Foundation where he was talking about A Star Is Born. And he said he'd been waiting for an opportunity to do something new and something challenging and different. And nothing was coming his way from his representation. So he decided to go and take A Star Is Born script and modify it and update it and do everything that we've seen him do with it. And that's a guy who's arguably one of the best. So I think that applies to any actor. That's how I think we motivate ourselves when we're, you know, waiting for the phone to ring.
Wow, that's amazing. I actually didn't know that story. But it's true that I've seen so many actors ending up producing things, either things they are in it or other things because they are just passionate about that project. And I never thought about why they would do that. And so that's how it started for you. You just wanted to do your own project, right?
I did, yeah, and it wasn't really like a super light bulb moment. I think it, or it feels like it kind of just happened. I'm sure there was more build up, but it feels like I just naturally moved into that place of doing my own stuff.
And now you've done several short films that you have written, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I've collaborated with some close friends of mine on their projects, and then part of that collaboration led to me writing my own stuff and them, you know, helping me and getting involved and working on those with me. So we've made two projects that I've written that have been released, and then there's a few more things in the pipeline to look at as we move forward.
And now that you've done a couple of these projects, what do you enjoy more? That's probably a difficult question, but do you enjoy more the acting side or the making a film side?
They're so different and yet they're so the same, and that's a probably infuriating answer to give someone who's asking a question, and it sounds super pretentious artist, right? But I love both in different ways. I mean, I think my draw is always going to be to acting and performing, but I feel that writing also has this different aspect to it. I think, you know, ultimately they're both ways of telling story. But the difference is that as an actor, I'm focused on one person or one character. And as a writer, I get to look at the entire narrative. And I think writing, I'll say this, writing and learning writing and continuing to understand how to write, because I'm still doing that, is something that has definitely helped me as an actor to see things from a different perspective, to see things from the perspective of the story as a whole, and not just how my character should be or feel in any given moment.
So writing has allowed you to understand more of the big picture of a film.
Exactly. I think I still had that before, but it's more now from a, you know, the, it's a terrible word, but the structural point of it. And, you know, at what point in the journey of a character are we? And how does that fit in from an actor's perspective? And what is trying to be achieved with this line or this moment? Because you appreciate that when a writer writes something and they write specific words of dialogue, they've written them in that way for a reason. And you can be flexible, and the good writers let you be flexible and play, but the tone and the essence is there for a reason.
And you say that you still very much learn, is still learning and progressing in the writing. How do you keep yourself, being challenged and learning new things in writing or in acting?
You know, I think it's interesting because I thought about that literally a few weeks ago, and I feel like with me on both sides, I've seen the pattern where I'll kind of start by just taking loads of classes or reading as much as possible. Like I've, you know, acting wise, read so many acting books, and the same with writing. I saw the same pattern. I was reading different books on writing to do with structure and technique. Or different writers and authors and their processes. And I find that super interesting. And so that's, I suppose, how I start. But then eventually I find myself naturally sort of just throwing that stuff away. Not that it's not valuable, but that it's like I've soaked up the info and I'm going to try and take the bits that resonate with me and try and apply it by actually doing it and knowing that probably what I'm doing is going to annoy me from time to time. But you kind of just have to keep at it, you know, keep painting, I guess would be the analogy. Painters kind of just paint on a canvas every day, and they probably hate most of their paintings until they get one which they love. I think it's the same kind of thing with writing and acting. Just do it.
Oh yeah, I very much agree because you can read as much as you can, but it's kind of sometimes a way to procrastinate before you actually do something. I think there is a point where you just have to do it and you have to be comfortable with the fact that probably at the beginning is gonna suck.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, probably not even probably, like, it's gonna suck. And then, you know, I think there's that always things that creatives have, or at least myself and the ones that I collaborate with, where even when we do something and we finished it, there's still a part of us that thinks it sucks. So when people tell us, oh, like, it's amazing, or, you know, if someone tells us, no, it sucks, like, either way, we're kind of just muting that noise from the outside. Like, it's nice to hear feedback, but, and it's not that we don't believe it, but I think it's kind of healthy to try and just be neutral to it, because you're always kind of unsure of what you've done anyway as a creative, and you always look at old stuff and go, yeah, it was good, but I could have done this better. I could have done that better. Next time, you know, I'd do it totally differently.
Yes, learning from the mistakes that you've made, and that's how you make something better afterwards. But it's really interesting what you say about listening to the comments, because you have now a couple of films that are out, and of course what you've done in other people's films. So you don't read the reviews at all, or do you read a little bit and then stop? How do you deal with that?
Well, I read the reviews, but I read them because I'm also playing producer on a lot of these. So I'm the one that most of the time is, you know, reaching out to the press contacts and trying to get the pieces written and collaborating with them. So I read them and I get the feedback. And I'd be lying if I said at times my ego didn't feel really good to hear some of the things that get written and said. But I think I try as best as possible to detach from that, because as I say, I don't think it's fully healthy one way or another. And I think that's a process for anybody, you know, or artist or not, you know, trying to, it's almost that paradox, like really, 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 really care about what other people think, because let's not pretend that we don't, but also at the same time, like really not care. And I know that sounds like antithetical, because it is, but I do feel that like that's the place we should all be trying to get to. You know, I want to make stuff because I want people to enjoy it and care about it. I'm not going to lie. But I also want to be sort of free as much as possible from their judgment or their perception or opinion, because really, I can't control that and it shouldn't influence me. Easier said than done, though.
Yeah, definitely easier said than done. But do you manage to kind of detach yourself from a film when it's done and just like it's up to the reviews and now you're working on the next project? Or do you always have kind of like a little phase when you're still attached to that project that you just released?
I think there's a phase. I think there's always a phase. And I think there's always a little part of it that's in there somewhere. But the intensity definitely drops and, you know, you move on to something new. But I think it's always there and a part of you, because it's this weird thing that artists have where, I don't know if you experience it, but you can kind of like benchmark periods of your life based on projects that you did.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah. Like most people would be like, yeah, when I was 22 to 25, I was working in this company, or I was living here, or I was dating that person. But as an artist, it's like, oh yeah, that's the 3 years where I was writing and making that film, or I was doing that manuscript or working on that painting. And I think, you know, I find that more and more. My life is blocked out by projects.
I absolutely, completely agree. That's exactly how I feel. Like that time I was writing this book, or that time I was working on this. And it's very true. And I think it's because your life at that time also influenced that particular project. I think it's not a coincidence that you work on a certain project at a certain point in your life, because that's the one that you needed to work on at that point.
I agree. Very true. I think it's all intertwined. And I think, again, sounding pretentious artist, it's true. Your life and your art aren't separate, or they shouldn't be. So
I don't think it's pretentious to say so. I think it's just a reality that many, many artists feel. And it's not pretentious. It's the same as someone who would work on a company, as you said earlier. But can I ask you then a sneak peek on what you're working on at this very moment?
Sure. Yeah, I've written a script that's inspired by the travel ban that a certain president of the United States put into place a few years ago. And it's actually inspired by some things that happened to my family and my cousins specifically, where being half Iranian, one of my cousins is still in Iran and she wasn't allowed to travel to the States because of this ban. And at the time, her parents, who have green cards, were in San Francisco. And my uncle, her dad, fell ill and he was in the ICU for months. And eventually, he sadly passed away out there. And for her, that was very complicated, as you can imagine, because she couldn't even go to visit him during this entire time. And she still hasn't been able to go out there and get closure because of, you know, this ban that was passed through. And so, you know, I think, like many, as we were just saying, artists in life, you know, you take your life experiences. I kind of took that and haven't done something directly related to it, but something inspired by that. It's basically looking at the travel ban and, you know, the day of it happening. And really it follows the life of an immigration officer who's bereaved, and he's trying to get his daughter back from child services, but he finds himself kind of stuck and torn between his duties and his moral compass, because when he comes into contact with specifically this young girl who's being detained, he finds that he can maybe risk losing everything that's important in his life because he sees the moral dilemma of wanting to help, you know, these people that have been treated unfairly just because they were on a list. And so that's a script that I've written, and looking to really raise funding for it now and see if we can get it made. It's not a comedy for sure, but I think it's an important story and a personal one as well.
Yeah, it is an important story to tell, definitely. I have a feeling that it's kind of the genre that you're going through. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've watched one of the short films that you released a couple of years ago, which was about the scandal of the baby stolen in Spain.
Yeah.
And yeah. I feel like it's kind of the inspiration you get from things that happen, not necessarily to you directly, but in your family or where you are. Is it where you get your inspiration from?
I think so. I mean, I have other projects that I've written that are completely fabricated from you know, non-real events like that. But I do obviously feel that, yeah, there's obviously things that come close to home that you just get inspired to do something about. And yeah, I don't know if it's something that I do consciously, but I see the pattern as well. And yeah, the film about the stolen babies was similar. You know, I foolishly thought that everybody knew that scandal had happened because I knew of it, having lived and grown up in Spain. But I quickly realized that pretty much everyone outside of the country had no idea about the nature of it or that it even existed. And, you know, the few things that had been done were kind of like with the travel ban. They're very much high-end, you know, numbers and stats and data and sensationalist headlines, and they don't really explore the human side of it as much. And I suppose I feel that's where filmmaking and art can maybe explore in a more detailed way, you know, to look at, you know, a stolen baby scandal sounds like a great headline, but what is that really like if you're someone who was a child that was given away at birth, or is a parent who had their children stolen and were told that child had just died at birth? Or what's it like to be someone from a country that's on a list who's not allowed to travel into another country just because, you know? And I think that's important to try and shed a bit of light onto, because it's easy to be distracted by the bells and whistles in some, you know, Western countries, and we forget maybe the real perspective of what's really going on out there.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of putting a face to a headline and putting all the feelings through it that usually documentary don't necessarily put, for example.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way, but I suppose it could be putting a face to it, or an imaginary face, and yeah, putting it out there and acknowledging the emotions behind it and the humanity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think in the film that I saw, it really did work. I really enjoyed the film. So I recommend all the listeners to have a look at the film. It's the title is Falsified, right? I just want to make sure I have the right one. Yes. I really recommend to have a look, because I did not know at all about the scandal of the stolen babies in Spain. As you said, I'm not from Spain, so I had never heard of it before. And in a few minutes, I really sympathized for for the character, which I think is a great talent as a writer and as an actor too. So yeah, congratulations for that film. And so for the film that you have in preparation, you say that you are looking for funding. Mm. So I know that it's a big subject and we probably don't have time to go into details into that, but could you give us a little bit of pointers on how you do that, how you get money to make a film?
Yeah, it's challenging when it's a short film, because obviously short films don't really make money. They're not about that. So that's an extra level of complication, because it's hard to go to an investor and say, I'd like you to invest in my idea, but you're not going to get any financial reward out of it. So that makes it more complex. And so I think for me, you know, the way I'm looking at it is understanding the communities and people out there that have been affected by this, and some of the institutions as well, and you know, legal entities that deal with the aspects of the ban, and reaching out to them and explaining to them what I'm trying to do and why, and also, you know, showing what I've done in the past with my friends and team, and prove that we have a track record. And I think, you know, that's step one, reaching out to these communities and seeing if they're open to investing, because they also want to help get this kind of story told, because they have an emotional connection to it. And then I think beyond that, you know, and the obvious, going to family and friends that have been influenced by it, there's then that good old fashioned crowdfunding, you know, and exploring that and putting together a good narrative package and, you know, seeing what we can do from a crowdfunding perspective, which I suppose is where my management and non-acting experience over the years maybe comes into play a little bit and helps out.
Yes, because currently you work in digital marketing, right? So it's great, because it's true, it's very related, but I'm wondering, how do you find time to do both at the same time?
I guess you just do, you know, you do less of the stuff. You just do less of the stuff that doesn't really matter. Like, do I need to watch Netflix 3 hours a day, or do I have to go out every weekend, or, you know, all that stuff? And I'm not saying I don't do that, but I think it's when you're working, I mean, I'm working freelance now, so it's a bit freer. But as of a year and a half ago, my experience had always been working with a company. So that is your strict 9 to 5 or 9 to 6. And then you add in your commute, and that's a lot of your day gone. But you have time in the morning and the evenings. And I think it's that motivation of using that time wisely. And even if it's just an hour a day, just do an hour a day of something is better than doing nothing and then one day for like 8 hours. So yeah, I think it's perspective. You know, I think we're easily led to spend time on stupid stuff that doesn't really add value to our lives. And so I kind of just looked at that and went, how can I cut out stuff that doesn't really help me to use that time to the stuff that does motivate me and inspire me?
Do you use a schedule, like a formal diary, or do you just kind of like do it?
So all of the above. I have, like, it's interesting. I kind of try just doing it. That sort of works a little. I have like post-it notes, which I sort of scribble stuff on, which helps, or like a notepad. I started actually creating like an Excel sheet. I know there's templates and tools you can buy, but I just decided to do my own. And that's kind of taken from working in digital marketing and agencies specifically, where they have what they call WIPs, like work in progress documents. So, you know, like they'll create these spreadsheets for what they're going to do each day or each week for their clients, and like big events, and they try to itemize like every task. And I always find it super interesting how, you know, we're really good and really well trained to do all these things for like a job or a company, but we never apply these approaches to our own lives. So I created like a little spreadsheet where I would try and put in like 4 or 5 things that I was going to do each day. And then like for the month, what the main objectives were. And then for the year, like what are the main objectives and goals for the year, and try and, you know, be fluid, but use that as a guideline as I go through, you know, day to day and week to week.
This is very interesting. That's actually what I do too, to just try to keep an eye on the most important goals, because sometimes I think you can be distracted by the things that are urgent but not necessarily important, if that makes sense. So
It does. It does. It makes me think of there's a quote that I heard, I think about 6 to 10 months ago from, of all people, Ashton Kutcher. And yeah, but I actually like it. And I think I give that guy more credit than people give him, because he's not like, he's played dumb characters on TV, but he's actually a super smart guy, and he works a lot as an entrepreneur. And he studied, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something crazy like bioengineering or something really like, intellectual. And his quote was that, he found himself just chasing emails every day and doing all this stuff and being super busy, but not feeling like he was spending time on his own stuff. And his quote was, he realized that other people's emails and requests were just their to-do list for him, and that he never got around to his own to-do list for himself. And I thought, wow, that's so true and so simple and so obvious, but actually just having someone else verbalize it like that was quite hitting. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, why spend, why should you always focus on other people's requests of you, because they're always going to be there. So that prioritizing, I think, is essential.
Oh, that's actually an excellent, really, really good advice. Because yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of people recommend to not really read your emails during the day when you are working on something, but because you will get an email and suddenly you're like, oh, I have to reply to this person, I have to reply to this person, and it can be extremely distracting, especially when you are at the stage where you are writing, when you are creating, when you are being, yeah, creative. And I was wondering actually, because you said that now you are freelance, well, before you had this kind of 9 to 5, 9 to 6 job. Is it easier now to juggle with your acting and filmmaking?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty is that I can set my own schedule for me, so I can work on my clients when needed. And the beautiful thing is, most of my clients are in different parts of the world, so I'm not stuck to one time zone. So that side is definitely more freeing. Obviously, on the flip side, you don't have the air quotes security of a stable job with a regular paycheck. But I suppose I question how stable that is anyway. Once you work in those environments for 9, 10 years, you kind of realize that they're short-term stable, but not long-term realistic. So yeah, I think freelancing has definitely made my life more fluid. And ultimately, in a way, I'm much happier because I can design my days on my terms, and that's more important than anything.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And I think a lot of people who do acting, they are always trying to find a job, but it's especially when you have auditions and things like that, it's very difficult to find a job that is flexible enough to do all these things. So freelancing can be a very good solution, depending on, of course, the area when you are where you are freelancing. I'm sure digital marketing is very in demand at the moment, more than ever, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, I'm not gonna lie. I'm lucky because I did work in these big companies for many years, and I'm grateful for it because I got to learn stuff that I can apply now. So, I wouldn't not have done that. It's something that's benefiting me, and even though it was maybe annoying and frustrating at the time, it's certainly something that's given me some skill set to help me have, to your point, that flexibility as an actor to be free for an audition, or to write when I want to write, or if I want to take 3 days to go and film my own projects with friends of mine, I can do that without having to ask someone permission to take time off work. And that's everything. And for any creative, that's key. And I think today in the world we live in, with the internet and everything, it's not easy, but it's much easier to create your own opportunities to have that kind of lifestyle. It takes work, but I'm sure you know that with your podcast and your following, it's probably not happened overnight, right? But you
No,
can do it.
definitely not.
Sure, but you can do it, and why not?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think with the internet, it's so much easier to find your own kind of almost carve your own opportunities and jobs outside of the normal traditional kind of companies. But as you said, you also have to be patient. You've done all these years in a company and you had to be patient because you had to have the experience, the contacts, the networking, etc. And that's probably very difficult to accept when you're an actor and all you want to do is act, right?
It is. But I suppose that's life, right? It's that mm-hmm. continual balance of knowing what you want and being clear on that, because if you don't, then you're going to get what you're given. And then also having the patience to just let it unfold and not rush it and not think that when you're 25, you need everything now, or when you're 35 and you don't have what you expect, something's wrong. Or when you're 50, it's too late. Like it's not, it just doesn't have to be that way. I think, you know, patience and persistence are undervalued. And I think sometimes that impatience leads us to make decisions that are short-term productive, but in the long run, don't get us to where we ever want to get to. And I think it's a big mindset shift, which I know is a struggle for me, but I think it's a valuable one. And, you know, sadly, the kind of stuff they don't teach in schools at the moment, but more of that kind of stuff should be taught. But again, that's a separate conversation for someone else's podcast.
And well, that leads to my last question, actually. What would be your best piece of advice for the listeners? And I'm thinking especially as someone who might want to start acting or might want to make their own film and don't know where to start.
I think if you just want to start acting, the key is to find a good class. And I think that is a case of, you know, if you can audit, so try, test different ones and find somebody as a teacher who inspires you and who you feel you can learn from in a room of people where you feel challenged, where you don't feel like you're the best or the worst, but that you feel like there's people that inspire you. So as an actor, that would be my advice. You know, yes, read the books and yes, do all these other things, but don't rush to try and be a movie star tomorrow, because that's false prophecy. Like, take the time to enjoy a good class, because it's important. As a filmmaker, I don't know, that's a harder one. I suppose with that, it is maybe more of a case of just do it. Just make your films. And it doesn't have to be a big thing that you put in a film festival that's super high volume. I think it's a thing of make something that could just be a couple of minutes long, put it on YouTube, put it on Instagram. You know, I think that's the key that people forget, which wasn't available to us 5-10 years ago, which is you can make stuff more easily now. And with the internet, you have your own distribution channel. So you don't need someone's permission. So just make your films, tell your stories. Don't worry about if they're good or bad. That's not your job. Just do it. You know, it's the same as, I guess, a Picasso or a Van Gogh. They probably didn't make one painting a year. They painted every day on many, many canvases and kept putting it out there until eventually stuff stuck. I think that's the same with film, and we can do that now.
I think that's a brilliant, brilliant advice. Now, where can people find you if they want to continue this discussion with you?
I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. I think Twitter is the best place, obviously, if people want to engage and continue some kind of dialogue or conversation. And Instagram is, you know, for those fun pictures of crazy actors and filmmakers. But yeah, Twitter's the best spot. And I won't spell my full name because my surname is a long, laborious one, but I'm sure you'll kindly put it in the link or something and people
can
follow
it. Yes, it will be in the show notes, and I will also tag you in social media. So anyone who's listening to the episode right now who has clicked from the social media, you will be able to go on Twitter or on Instagram and directly talk with you. Well,
awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with me today. I had a really good time. I learned a lot of things. I hope you had a good time too.
Absolutely. No, it's been great. Really good to chat to you, and thank you for taking the time and for doing this, you know, for doing a podcast where you can get artists on here and, you know, talk about their journey, because it's cathartic for us. And also hopefully it helps other people. So, you know, props to you for doing it.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, listeners, I will see you in 2 weeks. And I hope in the meantime, you have a good and creative day. Thank you for listening to the Partum Artist Podcast. If you want more advice and inspiration, head to the website, thepartumartistinoneword.com, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review if you enjoyed the show.